Valleytalk.com/free.
Valley Talk on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
It's KGAL's Valley Talk, today sponsored by Corwin Insurance, where they work with only the most reputable insurance companies and employ a team of dedicated insurance professionals whose goal is to serve you well and serve you long term. They do that by providing quality insurance services. They're independent, so they give you multiple choices of policies that meet your needs and give you price choices as well. It's a terrific organization, and they're in both Corvallis and Albany, Corwin Insurance. In Corvallis, you'll find them at 301 Southwest 4th Street. In Albany, at 2231 Santiam Highway Southeast. That's Corwin Insurance. Today on Valley Talk, I get the opportunity to chat with a friend, and I'm so glad to do it. She's not just a friend, but an extremely talented author and speaker. Her books have sold all over the world, and she lives right here in our local area in Albany. Her name is Karen Barnett. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Jeff.
I'm so glad that we've got a chance to chat. It's been too long since the last time. It's been years, I think, since we talked on the radio the last time.
Yeah, I think it was 2013, so quite a while.
Oh, man, way too long. So thanks for taking some time to be with us. We'll just briefly mention the books that you've authored. She started out with a wonderful book called Mistaken. And how long ago did that come out? Do you remember?
That was 2013. That was my debut novel, yes.
So that was the year that we chatted with you as well, mm-hmm. Mistaken. And you won some awards for that particular fictional novel, didn't you?
I did. That won a Cascade Award from Oregon Christian Writers, which is a wonderful support organization here in Oregon for authors. And every year they do a contest. Writing contest is going on right now, and they give out awards for various both published and unpublished writers.
And then you did a series of books called the Golden Gate Chronicles. Tell us about those.
Yes, those are set in the San Francisco earthquake of 1906, which is a time period I've always been interested in. A lot of change going on. If you think of the early part of the 20th century, of phones coming in and automobiles and electric lights and all that, and then to just talk about the earthquake and how that affected everything. And reminds me of what's going on today, where everything just kind of went into chaos there for a bit. So.
Yeah, certainly. And then you've wrote a couple of books having to do with your national parks experience, and we're going to find out about that in just a moment, kind of your background here. And three books, as a matter of fact, I think, that are all kind of connected to parks.
Right. Yes, it's a three-book series. It's called the Vintage National Parks Novels. I am a history buff. I love traveling through time, is how I call it. I'm a big sci-fi fan, so I love any kind of time travel story. But my way of doing that is by exploring history. And so I took three different national parks during the early part of the 20th century and kind of looked at their history at that time and what was going on and put that into novel form. So there's The Road to Paradise, which is set at Mount Rainier National Park, which is actually where I worked as a ranger. And then Where the Fire Falls is set at Yosemite National Park in the 1920s. And Ever Faithful, which is my most recent novel, and it was set at Yellowstone National Park in the early 1930s.
So Karen's books are available at bookstores all around and also online, of course, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, etc. And Karen is also a speaker who loves to speak for local groups, and it doesn't matter the size. Of course, right now, we're not getting together in groups these days, but in the future, that's going to be happening again, and we'll make sure and let everybody know as we go through the program how you can get a hold of Karen if you'd like to have her speak at your organization or for your particular meeting. She'd really enjoy doing that. Mm-hmm. But as we kind of get rolling here with Karen Barnett, our guest, let's find out about Karen herself. Where'd you grow up originally?
I actually grew up in Tacoma, up in Washington, and used to see Mount Rainier out my window every day. Well, not every day, because, you know, it's Washington.
But a little cloudy some days, yeah.
So the days that it was sunny, we saw it. And lived in Washington until I went to college. Did that and actually went across the country to Indiana, Valparaiso University for 4 years, and then came back to Oregon State and was there for a couple of years doing a master's program, and then met my husband there, and we settled in Oregon. So we're still here.
Now, you, when you got married, was your husband interested in the same sorts of things as you, or were you of varied interests?
Somewhat. He is not quite as outdoorsy as I am, but he does love parks and that type of thing, so we like to go out and do that together. But he also likes being in the city, so I had always dreamed of, you know, going out to live in Alaska or someplace, and that was not on the radar for him, so we both made sacrifices there.
So at Oregon State University, what was your master's?
It was in geography, natural resources.
I see. And how did you get involved then in the parks program?
Well, actually, I always loved, being out in parks and hiking and that. I did some hiking, not as much hiking as some folks do, but loved learning about nature. Spent a lot of time in my backyard just learning everything I could about plants and bugs and whatever I could get my hands on. And so when I was in grad school, we were learning more about the natural resources, particularly of the Northwest. And so I started applying to different jobs in the Northwest where I could be teaching, like, outdoor education type of things. And so I actually worked at a wildlife park up in Washington called Northwest Trek Wildlife Park, and that's all native wildlife. And we got to take tram tours, and so I, had the microphone, drove the big bus, and we would drive through and teach people about the different wildlife of the Northwest.
And how old were you when you were doing that?
That was in my early 20s.
I see.
Yeah, and it was a summer job when I was at OSU. And then when I was coming home from college in Indiana, too, so even before that. And then from there, I had some friends who had become rangers at Mount Rainier, and I was like, oh, that would be the dream. So I applied to the National Park Service and got on as a seasonal park ranger up at Mount Rainier and did that for 2 seasons.
What was that like? You said that would be the dream. Did it turn out to be the dream? Did you really love it?
I really loved it. It's not as glamorous, maybe, as some people would think, but there's some definite benefits in that at Mount Rainier, we lived in the park. Not all parks are that way, but we actually had housing inside the park because it's too far from anything. And so even though the housing wasn't fantastic, once all the people left in the evening, you had the park to yourself. So evenings after the visitor center closed and everyone left, you could go hiking in the evening, and in the subalpine where I was up at Sunrise on the northeast corner, it gets dark really late. So you could go out hiking in the evening and the early morning if you had a late shift. So it was wonderful.
I've heard this before about certain locations. It gets dark really late. Mm-hmm. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it just means that we're above the tree line. So there weren't trees to cause shade. When you're in the forest, it feels like it gets dark earlier because even when it's just dusky, it's very dark in the woods.
I see.
But
okay.
If you're up above the tree line, any little bit of light, even a good, full moon could cause enough light to that you could almost hike by. Not that I'd recommend that.
So you're a park ranger there and naturalist at Mount Rainier National Park. And then you also did some work in Oregon in that type of a job as well, right?
I did. After my husband and I got married, I applied to Oregon State Parks, and I went to work at Silver Falls State Park, which is just outside of Salem, east of Salem. And I loved that as well. I remember being in the interview for that, and that was a summer seasonal job as well. And we were interviewing for it, and the gal in charge asked me if I had any questions. They always do that at the end of the interview. Do you have any questions for us? And I said, yeah, how big is your naturalist staff? And she said, well, if we hire you, it would be one. Which shocked me at the time, but was actually quite a blessing because it meant I got to create the program and do pretty much what I wanted and teach what I wanted. And I came from a national park background, so I had high standards of, won't just show fun movies in the amphitheater, but we will talk about nature and we'll teach the kids and we'll do junior ranger programs. So we kind of went all out, and it was a lot of fun. I did that for 2 years.
And did they continue after you left the program? Did someone come and take your place and keep it rolling?
They did. And I was quite excited about that because I had been pushing to see if we could make my job a year-round position. So I did a lot of field trips with schools and actually went out to schools. I've been in almost every public school in the Salem-Keizer area and Silverton and Staten and all of those local communities talking about parks. This was quite a while ago. those kids are probably grown now, but so they kept extending my season so that we could do that outreach from the park. And then after I left, then they actually, the next person they hired on as a full-time employee, as a permanent employee, which was like, oh, okay, after I leave, but that's all right. I'm glad they kept it going. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that's terrific. So let me just remind the listeners that we're talking with author and speaker Karen Barnett. She lives in our local area, but she's known all over the place for her wonderful books that she's written, and we'll dive into the books as we have plenty of time to chat with her today a little later on. We're just sort of finding out about Karen at this point in the conversation. I've heard all this amazing stuff about your education and about how you applied it and used it and enjoyed doing such in the Mount Rainier National Park and Silver Falls State Park near Salem, and you've made a kind of a career out of that. You're also starting a family, and we want to find out more about that, but I haven't yet heard anything about interest in writing at all. How did that come about, and when did you start knowing you wanted to write and get some stories out of yourself?
Well, I always loved writing. I did a lot of writing when I was a kid and a teenager. I have lots of, you know, three-ring binders in my... I have a box of three-ring binders of stories that I was writing as a kid that no one will ever see. And but I kind of put that away for a time because I just felt like, oh, I'm not quite good enough to be an author. And so I set that aside and went into other things. But it was always kind of lingering in you know, the dream world in the back of my mind that I would love to do that someday. And when I was working for parks, you know, a couple of years into working for Oregon State Parks, ran into the issue that I was working tourist hours, which are weekends and evenings, and my husband, who worked for the state at the time, was working business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 kind of thing.
So you were working 7 days a week, you two, yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of thought, what's a job I could do and stay at home and have more time with my husband, and maybe, you know, we could have family eventually. And I thought, well, I could start writing for magazines, or I could write children's books, you know, which looked to me like that would be really easy to do because they're not that complicated.
Right.
Which I thought at the time. And then and I pictured, you know, well, if we had kids, the baby could sleep in a little Moses basket next to the computer on the floor and would sit there and coo while I typed at the computer, and it's totally not how it works. I didn't know that much about kids at the time, but they really take a lot of energy. So, but that's how I got started with writing. And now I keep hearing people say, don't quit your day job when you want to become a writer, because it's a long, long time before you get anything published.
And so let's kind of continue diving into that. How long of a time was it till you got anything published, and what was the first thing for you?
Oh, boy. So I left Oregon State Parks in the mid-90s, late 90s maybe, and the first thing I had published was a couple of poems in a kids magazine, it's the Ladybug, Babybug group, cricket magazines, and I had some of those in the early 2000s. So, I mean, it took some time even just to get some poems in, and then, but then I was raising kids too, so I wasn't doing it full-time.
Right. When did you start your family?
Our son was born in 1999.
I see.
Yeah. So he's a pre-millennial baby. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, pre-millennial.
Yeah.
So if I was to ask you, what kinds of things did you write, and were the things you were writing prior to getting something published, were they as good or better than what got published, what would you say?
Oh, they were not nearly as good as what got published.
I see.
It takes a long time to understand the craft, and you know, I thought I was a great writer, but I hadn't studied writing. I hadn't you know, taken a lot of writing classes and that type of thing, so I was just kind of, you know, making it up as I went.
And what do the writing classes and that study and then the experience, what does it do for you?
It teaches you that writing, one thing that came out to me when I was taking particularly classes on writing novels, is that novels have changed a lot in the past 20 years, so the novels that I grew up loving had a lot of description right off, you know, the first few chapters. Sometimes you had flashbacks to a character's past, and people don't have the patience for that anymore.
Ah.
You need that, but you need to sprinkle it in throughout the book and not just load it all in the first chapter or two. So, you know, I grew up on Hardy Boys, and, you know, the first chapter is all, you know, their family and their father and the description of where they live, and, you know, it's just, people don't write that way anymore. So you pretty much start in the middle of the action, and then you start giving hints of what has happened to the characters in the past. And that was a big learning curve.
Well, yeah, I could imagine that would be, because if I was to start writing something, that's probably how I would start it, by giving a good description of who we were talking about and whose lives were surrounding that person and mm-hmm. where they lived and all. That would just make sense. But you're right.
Yeah.
You know, the books that I read, the fiction books I read often, I think they're written in the way you're describing, this newer way where they just kind of, you start in the middle of the action and then you find out things as you go along.
Yeah, and you see that on TV and movies now too, is that there's never any backstory at the beginning or any, you know, long shots where you're seeing all the scenery for 10 minutes before they get into the movie, because people will just stop watching or they'll close the book, or, you know, we have to get them hooked in the story first and then start providing that background.
So, Karen, what does that say about us as a society, do you think?
I think it says that things move a lot faster now, and there's so many options for entertainment. You know, I think of my kids being home from school right now, and they are, you know, on Netflix and TikTok and Snapchat, and there's just so many things for them to be entertaining themselves with that, you know, you really have to get in there and fight for that little piece of the entertainment puzzle that you can get in there, or the pie, get in there and get a slice of it. You have to grip them right off the bat, or they're going to go off to the next thing.
Oh, yeah. So a little less patience now.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think I've seen some discussion as to whether we read less than we used to. I don't think that's really true. I think we read as much as most generations have, and I think we're as smart or, you know, whatever as others. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just different. It's just changed.
Sure, yeah. Well, you wouldn't expect that the way they wrote books in, the 18th century, for example, would mm-hmm. be the way we'd write them now.
Right.
So the fact that things have evolved just in our lifetimes a little bit, I guess when you step back and take a look at that, that doesn't seem surprising.
Right, right. But it's surprising to a lot of new writers, because they want to write like their favorite authors. Well, if your favorite author was from 50 years ago, you're going to have to do some updating.
You're listening to Karen Barnett. She's an author and speaker from our local area, but her books sell all over the place. She's written several series, and we're going to talk about the books and more about what you would enjoy if you dove into. Many of you listening have been reading some of Karen's books. Maybe you didn't know that Karen Barnett that you love so much, she's actually from around this area. I mean, that's maybe a surprise to you, but she is. She's a terrific lady and lives right in Albany. So Karen's books are available at your local bookstore, which may or may not be available for you to go into at this point. But you can get her books online as well at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all the normal places where you'd get great literature. Is your stuff in like Kindle versions and stuff too?
Yes, it's on ebook and it's on audio, so it's on Audible and all of those online sources and the library. It's out there.
How do you go about getting an audio book done, by the way? I've always wondered about that myself.
Well, for me, it was done through my publishing house.
I see.
Yeah, I published through it's Waterbrook and Multnomah, which is a division of Penguin Random House, and they take care of all the audio, which is nice. But I have had friends that have done their own audio, and you can hire narrators to go ahead and read through your books and record them professionally. I don't recommend people doing them at home, but there's some very talented voice narrators. Probably like yourself, you could probably do that.
I don't know. I don't think I'm that good. But
take the radio voice.
Yeah. I think you have to actually act when you read a book, don't you? I mean, to express the emotions and the feelings that are...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, that leaves me out. So.
Yeah, and they're very good at doing kind of different, slightly different voices for different characters. I'm always amazed how they can do that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So your publisher handled that for you. That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, I really want to dive into the books, Karen. We're coming up against a break, so we're going to... take a quick break for paying the bills here, and then we'll come back to Valley Talk with author and speaker Karen Barnett. and learn all about these great books that she's written, some of the characters and how the series, you know, tie together, et cetera, right after these words here on KGAL's Valley Talk.
Think you're paying too much for insurance? Put Corwin Insurance to work for you. Corwin Insurance, your local, reliable, independent insurance agency for your personal or business needs. Since 1977, in Albany on Sanium Highway Southeast, across the street from Sizzler, or in downtown Corvallis on 4th between Jefferson and Adams. Check out their website, corwininsurance.com. That's CORWIN insurance.com. Or come in for a free quote today.
It's all happening in downtown Albany.
Your source for premium pet food and supplies is Kuhl's Feed and Pet Supply. Their stock of wild bird food and feeders, as well as premium Douglas fir wood pellets, is excellent. Kuhl's is at 760 Southeast 2nd next to the railroad tracks, where they care for your pets as much as you do.
If you love browsing through antique stores, you are invited to Albany Antique Mall that features 20,000 square feet of antiques, collectibles, and vintage clothing. Great variety, reasonable prices, and the best customer service is what you'll find at Albany Antique Mall at the corner of 2nd and Ellsworth.
Willamette Community Bank is proud to be the only bank founded and headquartered in Albany, Oregon. Invest in your local community by shopping and banking local. Located in downtown at 4th and Lyon or online at willamettecommunitybank.com. Bank local, shop local. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
It's all happening in downtown Albany.
It's time to take control of your company's transportation costs. PetroCard has been working with commercial companies and their fleets to develop custom fuel management programs for over 3 decades. Their programs provide access to the 2 largest cardlock networks in the country, Commercial Fueling Network, CFN, and Pacific Pride. PetroCard operates over 60 stations throughout Washington and Oregon and offers access to over 180,000 stations nationwide. Their fueling stations are open 24/7 and are specifically designed for commercial trucks, making them convenient and easy to navigate. PetroCard fleet cards also reduce unauthorized purchases and prevent theft. You set the approved controls for fuel types, locations, and quantity restrictions, giving you complete peace of mind. Visit them at PetroCard.com or call 1-800-950-3835 and let PetroCard find a solution that works for you. That's PetroCard.com or call 1-800-950-3835 now. PetroCard, more than just fuel.
Veterans face treacherous situations filled with peril while serving our country. Many veterans come home physically injured, suffering with PTSD, have traumatic brain injuries or other ailments. Treatment is available, but we need your help. Help Heal Veterans, with the support of generous citizens like you, improves veterans' lives on a daily basis across the United States. For over 45 years, Help Heal Veterans has provided over 30 million therapeutic art kits and craft projects to these critically injured veterans, at no charge to them. Doctors, therapists, and brain injury experts recommend this type of therapy. Since the beginning of World War I, over 100 years ago, art and craft therapy has proven to improve gross motor skills, improve memory, and lessen anger issues in healing veterans. To volunteer or learn more, visit HealVets.org. Help a veteran. Visit HealVets.org.
Hi, this is Mike Adams with Adams Rib Smokehouse. I wanted to thank everybody for voting us best in the Mid-Valley. We have a huge selection of great meats and side dishes that will make everyone's mouth water. Pulled pork, pulled chicken, ribs, brisket, whatever barbecue you want, we can do it. 2 locations at 1210 State Street and 2505 North Liberty. If you're interested in catering, we can cater from 5 to 5,000. Look for us on Facebook or Google Adams Rib Smokehouse. For more information, 503-362-2194.
Take out only till further notice.
If it happens overnight, Eric and Gary have it live during Red Eye Radio on Smart Talk 1580 KGAL.
Back to KGAL's Valley Talk. Jeff McMahon, your host. Our guest, Karen Barnett. Karen is an author and speaker from our local area. Her books are sold worldwide. Her website is KarenBarnettBooks.com, and Barnett is spelled with 2 T's at the end. That's Karen Barnett Books. .com. Check it out. It is a gorgeous website with lots of good information, and you'll see all the books that she has authored, and we're going to kind of dive in and talk about those books. And just before we do, one last little thing I wanted to ask Karen about, and I forgot to ask about it before, and that was how folks get a hold of you to have you come and speak at a function. You know, once we can all get together and have group meetings again, how do they make an appointment with you as a speaker?
Well, there's a contact tab on my website. You gave the address for it, KarenBarnettBooks.com. So you can either contact me through my website or you can look me up on Facebook. I have an author page there. I think it is Karen Barnett Author on Facebook. And, you know, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all of the various social medias. So I'm pretty easy to find, I think. And I love to talk with women's groups at churches. I've done women's retreats. I have spoken with book clubs and different book organizations and teachers groups. So I am open.
Karen Barnett, our guest, your first book, Mistaken. Tell us how it came about that you decided first to try to write a novel. And was this your first attempt at a novel?
It was not my first attempt. I have a couple, put away in, they're probably on floppy disks somewhere in drawers that will never see the light of day. And this was actually my second full novel for adults that I had written. The first one was actually published second. So they were published out of order for me, but they weren't part of the series, so that didn't matter. So Mistaken was inspired by a story my dad had told me, and it was a little bit about, so it's not my grandparents' story, I have to put that out there, but it was inspired by some things that my grandfather had done in the Prohibition era in the 1920s, and they lived in Port Angeles, Washington at the time, and if you know your Washington state geography, it's up on the coast of the peninsula up there, the Olympic Peninsula, and right across the strait is Victoria, B.C. in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And so we were under prohibition in the 1920s, but people could still go to Canada and buy liquor. And so apparently my grandfather had done this a few times, and they would actually get in boats and go in the middle of the night and row across the strait, which is about 20 miles, and they would do it at night so they wouldn't get caught, and would buy Canadian whiskey and bring it back, and he would probably give it or sell it to his friends in the mill. He worked in a paper mill there, wood mill, paper. I think it was paper. And so, and then one time when he was coming back, they actually found government agents waiting on the beach for them to arrest them. And they had to jump out of their boats and swim for it, and they lost everything they had brought and their boats, but they got away with this story of, coming back to find the G-men on the beach. And my dad would tell the story, and that image of them rowing up to the beach and the lights coming on and the G-men waiting for them with their Tommy guns, not very 1920s image in my mind, just like, wow, that could be a scene in a movie. That could be a scene in a novel. And I just got to thinking, what if, that's how stories always start, is what if this happened, what if that happened, and you just start building the story from there. In my family story, my grandfather blamed his wife for calling the G-men on him, which was always kind of a family joke, whether or not my grandmother had actually turned him in. And she wouldn't say that she did, and she wouldn't say that she didn't. And so no one knows to this day whether she was the one that turned them in or not. And I just got to thinking, why would a woman turn in someone that she loved? Was it to protect him? Was it in a fit of anger? It's so many things it could have been. So what if my character, if I have a heroine that wants to turn in someone she loves, what would make her do that? And that's where the story of Mistaken came from. It's a very different story than what my grandparents went through. It's not their romance. It's just built off of those simple ideas.
And you branched off from there. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I, for some reason, did not ask you about that when the book came out and we first talked. And that is fascinating how this came from, or at least the idea germinated from, real life.
Right. Right. And that's where a lot of stories start. They either start from something you hear or read in the news or see on TV, and the story just starts rolling in your head and you start writing it down. So
now you say
it's that easy. I mean, there's more to it than that, but
right. You say heroine. So tell us about the heroine or lead character in Mistaken.
In Mistaken, her name is Lori Burke, and she is actually the daughter of an alcoholic, which would, really complicate things during Prohibition. And it's her brother that takes up this rum-running lifestyle. And so she wants to protect her brother, and protect her father from, you know, having access to alcohol. And it's, she actually runs in, she's down on the beach watching to see whether her brother was involved. She went down to the beach in one of the very first scenes and sees them bringing those boats ashore. And she runs into a man on the cliff, on the bluff, up, that's how that coast is you're up on a bluff looking down at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs into our hero, Daniel, up on the bluff and assumes that he is one of the rum runners. And he's actually a pharmacist in town. And if you do any research about Prohibition, you find out that pharmacists are actually able to prescribe medicinal alcohol at the time, which was just makes for another element of suspense in what was going on during Prohibition. So it was kind of this mistaken assumption that he was a rum runner and he was involved with their brother, and then they kind of have to sort out all these mistaken assumptions.
See, no wonder this book won awards. I mean, this is such a cool, twisted up, complicated story with all kinds of possibilities here.
Yeah, it had some elements of suspense. It's really a historical romance with a little bit of suspense. And I've actually had male readers, you know, who would never pick up a romance novel, read this one and enjoy it. So, yeah, it was a very fun book to write. It was my fastest book of all the ones that I've written. I wrote it in about 9 months and from beginning to end. And it was quite the experience. The 20s are just a fascinating time period. So much going on.
So that's Karen Barnett's book, Mistaken. Karen Barnett, our guest, she's an author and speaker. She's from our local area, but as I mentioned, her books sell all over and very, very popular author. And after Mistaken, how long was it until your next book came out?
Well, the next book is called Out of the Ruins, and it was the first of a three-book series set in the San Francisco earthquake of 1906. And I had actually written Out of the Ruins before I wrote Mistaken. So it was kind of my learn to write book is what I say in terms of writing for the adult market, or not for, because I was writing for kids before that. That's what I mean by adult market. And so Out of the Ruins was already done when Mistaken was contracted. And so we actually ended up contracting through a weird series of events, and I don't want anyone who's aspiring to write novels think this is however how it happens.
But still, tell us how it happened.
So Mistaken was picked up by a publisher called Abingdon Press out of Nashville, and they contracted Mistaken in December of 2012 as a drop-in book for their summer line. So they had an opening in their summer line, so it actually went to press, you know, it was contracted in December, end of December, and then went to press in July, which is ridiculously fast. Usually when they contract a novel, anyone contracts a novel, mm-hmm. it's 12 months to 24 months before it hits the shelf.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
wow.
It takes a long time. But since they had this hole, they wanted to have a novel that was already done that they could just slide right in. So that happened really fast, at least from their end of things. And then we contracted the three-book series a few months after that with the same publisher. And so I actually contracted four books in 1 year, which is crazy.
Oh, that is amazing.
It was quite a year. I was blown away. So after, you know, 10 years or so of attempting to write novels and get into the writing business, suddenly I had four. So, you know, it's a kind of overnight success that took 10 years.
Man, that's incredible how that happened for you,
yeah.
Karen. So you'd already written Out of the Ruins. Now, since it ended up coming out second, did that give you a chance to go back through and maybe relook at some things, or did it go out the door and become a book just the way that it was when you finished it?
I did get to go back and work through it a little bit more. It had already been in some national writing contests, American Christian Fiction Writers, ACFW, if anyone is interested in pursuing Christian fiction writing, that's a good organization to join. They had a writing contest for unpublished writers. So Out of the Ruins had been a finalist in their, that's called the Genesis Contest. And so that was even before Mistaken was picked up. So it was pretty polished, but we went through it again. And the fact that it came out after Mistaken was wonderful, because then we could release Out of the Ruins as the first of a three-book series, and it wouldn't be out of order with my other books.
Yeah, that worked out perfectly mm-hmm. then. Almost as if someone was watching out for you, Karen.
Really seems that way, yes. I definitely believe that.
Yeah, so you've started this series, The Golden Gate Chronicles. Did you write out of the ruins with the idea of writing a series of books based upon the same era and locale, or did you just write out of the ruins on its own and then decide to continue with those characters or that setting?
When I first started the book, I had only planned it as a single book, but partway through I kept having ideas of other characters and other storylines that I would like to go into a little bit more. So it was, you know, partway through the writing that I decided it really could be a three-book series. And so that when my agent started pitching it to publishing houses, we set up the proposal as a three-book series.
I see. Very good. And then tell us about each book, you know, in as much as you can, Out of the Ruins, Beyond the Ashes, and Through the Shadows, the three books in the Golden Gate Chronicles.
Right. Sure. These are, I would say, different from Mistaken. Mistaken had a little bit of a suspense element. These books are more traditional romance, historical romance, and so there's less of that danger and intrigue, though there is some. In the first book, the main character's name is Abby Fisher, and her sister is actually dying of cancer at the beginning of the book. And if you think about that time period, you know, it's difficult to treat cancers today, but we have so many more options than they did in 1906.
Mm.
And in 1906, and I always jump back into the history, so apologize. I don't dump all of the history on my readers. But in 1906, the main treatment for cancer was arsenic, which you can imagine is not the most effective treatment.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Not the best thing for you. But they were looking at some other options at that point, including X-ray radiation. X-rays were only discovered about 10 years before this, not quite 10 years before this. And they were thinking that X-rays were going to be the cure-all for everything. So they were using it to treat skin conditions and cancers and just irradiating people with this radiation, which is fascinating. And it did help some things, including cancer. But we know today the dangers of X-rays as well, and they did not know that at the time. So her sister is pulled into one of these studies on X-ray radiation. And so they move from their home in near San Jose, California. They move to San Francisco so that she can get treatment for this cancer. And it is the doctor, one of the doctors doing the research, is the person that Abby, that's our romantic lead. Abby connects with him while they are trying to cure her sister of cancer using these X-rays.
I see.
And as you can imagine, it wasn't as effective as they'd hoped. And they lose her sister, and she's very angry at God and just says, okay, that's it, God, we're done. And that's at the point when the earthquake kind of changes everything for the people of San Francisco and the people in the story. And it's kind of a question of, you know, if God's going to get your attention, would he shake the earth in order to do that? And, of course, I'm not saying that God would cause an earthquake just to get someone's attention, but that's kind of how it plays in through Abby's life. Because he will have all things work together for good for those who love him. And so that's where Abby is going to learn to trust God and rely on him, is during the disaster.
This is Karen Barnett, author and speaker, talking about her book, Out of the Ruins, the first of the Golden Gate Chronicles. And among the 7 novels that she's written so far. And so the next book is called Beyond the Ashes.
Yes. And it picks up the storyline of the X-ray research. I got very interested in that when I was doing the research and thinking about these doctors would test the X-ray equipment on themselves before they ever put a patient under it. And they would routinely X-ray their hand just to make sure the levels were set to the point where they wouldn't burn their patients. And so if you can imagine a doctor doing that over and over and over to his own hand, what that caused for medical professionals at the time. And so in Beyond the Ashes, I have a young nurse who comes to, she's actually the relative of someone from Out of the Ruins, and she comes to San Francisco to help with the refugee crisis after the earthquake. And she also comes to help her brother, who is one of these researchers, and the other doctor, who is his partner. And she is a young widow, and she's looking for a new purpose in her life. It's been a couple of years since her husband passed away, and she wants some new beginning, some reason to go on. And so she goes to San Francisco to help, and she ends up helping at this hospital where they're doing this research. And when the doctor that she's falling in love with starts showing some signs of the very disease he's trying to cure, she has to ask if it's worth a second chance at love, if there's a chance he might be pulled away. So that's,
boy.
Yeah, it's some hefty stuff, but
it sounds like one where
it's really dark. It's actually a lot of humor and a lot of sweetness and a lot of faith.
Yeah, but it sounds like we're going to need some tissues for this one, though.
Maybe so, especially if you've been through cancer, had a family, lost a family member to cancer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it could
I
be healing been. As well. I had a woman in a book club tell me that her sister had passed away of cancer, and she found reading these books to be helpful to her. So I don't know if that's the case for everyone. But
well, that's got to feel good when you hear something like that.
It really does, because I was concerned about that, whether it would be just, you know, a trigger. They call it, you know, emotional triggers for people that have been through hard things. But to hear someone say it was healing for her to see how Ruby viewed God through all of this situation and how Abby talked with God through the situation and gave her hope for the future. So
that's Beyond the Ashes, and then the third book in the series, Through the Shadows.
Right, and Through the Shadows takes a little bit of a different turn, and it's a young woman who comes into San Francisco to help at a mission that is just outside of Chinatown. And we introduced this mission in the first book, and it's a mission a real mission in history, where the leader of it, Donaldina Cameron, rescued young women from Chinatown who were embroiled in prostitution. And that was a big problem in Chinatown around the turn of the 20th century and even before that, because of immigration laws, only certain people were allowed into Chinatown from China. It's only so many Chinese were allowed to emigrate, and they were not allowed to bring their families. So there were very few women. And so prostitution became a big deal, and young girls were often brought in to serve as prostitutes in Chinatown. And she was a Scottish-American missionary who went into Chinatown and would just break into these brothels and rescue girls, and they would live in this mission house right on the edge of Chinatown that's still there today. It's called Cameron House, and it's a wonderful ministry for, I think it's mostly families and inner-city kids and that type of thing that they appeal to now. But in 1906, she was doing a lot of work in the brothels. And so my heroine comes to work with Donaldina Cameron and actually meets an attorney who is helping people as they're recovering from the earthquake, as they're starting to rebuild, and they're trying to fight insurance companies that are saying, well, your building was destroyed by the earthquake, not by the fire, so we're not going to pay you. So there was a lot of loss in that earthquake beyond just loss of life. There was a lot of loss of property, and people trying to start over were really in a tough spot. And so he's working with that, and, of course, a lot of corruption in San Francisco at that point. And so these two people come together to kind of help the reconstruction of San Francisco during that time.
Oh, that's Through the Shadows. So that's the series titled The Golden Gate Chronicles. And then Karen has reached back into experiences from her own life and her experience with working in the outdoors as a park ranger with the next series of books she's written called the Vintage National Park Series. Tell us about these books.
Well, these have been so much fun to write because of my own passion for the national parks and for the outdoors. And it was a collision. I tell people it's a collision of passions for me. It's faith, it's nature, and it's history, and national parks all wrapped into one. And so these books have a little more of a style of sort of nostalgia, where we're going to go back into the national parks in the 20s and 30s and see what it was like to be there and to work there during that time. And I started this because I was thinking back about my own time at Mount Rainier, which was not that far back. It was it was in the early 90s. It does feel like a lifetime ago. But as a woman working in the National Park Service, at that point, you know, there were a lot of women rangers, and it wasn't unusual. But I was thinking, you know, boy, when they first started bringing women into the National Park Service, what that must have been like for the first women rangers, or the first women that wanted to be rangers and weren't allowed to. And that's where The Road to Paradise, my first novel of that series, got started. And it's a young woman who's actually the daughter of a state senator from Washington. Hmm. And she finagles her dad into getting her this job at Mount Rainier in the 1920s. And she goes up there partially because she loves nature, and she's read every book on the park and every book about nature. She's a big fan of Emerson and Thoreau, if you've read any of their writings from the time. Very, you know, nature will save us all kind of ideas. And she goes up to the park with no practical knowledge of wilderness, just all book knowledge. And so she goes up there, and it's the chief ranger of the park, Ford, is kind of tasked with protecting her and making sure she can work, because her dad's made some donations, making sure she can work and but stay safe. And he's really not that excited about looking after this city girl who is all about poetry and nature but really doesn't know how to keep herself safe. So there's a lot of humor and sweetness to this story. But there's also a little bit of danger in that a former love interest of hers basically wants to develop the park for economic purposes.
Oh.
And they have to battle against him to keep Mount Rainier from turning into just a playground for the elite, which was a concern in the 20s at Mount Rainier. They were talking about putting golf courses up at Paradise, which is the beautiful meadows up, you know, on the southwest side, and which they actually did at one point. And, you know, massive hotels and cabins and all of the things that you could possibly put up there to bring tourists in, which would be very damaging to that area and wouldn't be quite the wilderness that it is today.
So that's The Road to Paradise. The next book in this series is called Where the Fire Falls. What a good title.
Yes. And that's actually based at Yosemite National Park at the end of the 1920s, 1929. So the very height of the Roaring Twenties. And for those that have been to Yosemite at that time, well, actually throughout history, I've actually run into people who said, I actually got to see the firefall at Yosemite. And that's what the firefall was, is something you would never imagine anyone doing in a national park today. But on the cliffs of Yosemite from Glacier Point, they would build this big bonfire up at the top of one of those cliffs where there was a hotel up there. And they would build a big bonfire. And then at night, just at dusk, they would start pushing the flaming cinders over the side of this cliff.
Mm.
And down in the valley where the campgrounds and other hotels were, you could look up and see these sparkling embers falling over the side of the cliff. It was called the firefall. And it was something that they started for tourists in the late 1800s. And it went up through about 1969, and they did it almost every night. And so it was a big tradition, and people would go up to watch the firefall. And, you know, those of us from the Northwest think, oh, fire, national park's bad.
But, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, but the cliffs in Yosemite, there's no trees there. It's just all granite. So there was no risk. It was just a spectacle that they did for tourists.
And I see.
So there's still, you know, they stopped doing it in the 60s because of so many people trampling the meadows down in the valley that they wanted to stop this tradition. But you still go to Yosemite today, and people are like, oh, we miss seeing the firefall every night. So,
oh, wow.
The memories are still very strong in the people who saw it.
So that's the second book in the series called the Vintage National Park Series. And there's just enough time for about 2 minutes, my friend, to talk about your latest book, which is called Ever Faithful.
Yes, and I was excited to put Ever Faithful into the 1930s because the 1930s were a great time for the National Park Service, bad time for our country with the Great Depression. But the National Park Service was able to bring in a lot of employees through the Civilian Conservation Corps, which is something that maybe not a lot of people know about. But so I have a young man from Brooklyn who is out of work and wanting to protect his family. He joins the new Civilian Conservation Corps and is shipped from Brooklyn to Yellowstone, and he's never been outside the streets of Brooklyn.
Well, that's a culture shock.
Yes, exactly. And so this experience of being in Yellowstone for the first time and meeting a young woman who was actually pretty much raised there and knows everything there is to know. And so the two of them kind of are from very, very different worlds. And that was a very fun book to write. And, of course, Yellowstone has so much going on that, you know, it's just a lot of story fodder there.
Karen Barnett has been our guest. She's the author of all these books we've described. She's a terrific speaker. And she's available to speak at your meeting once we're allowed to have meetings again. And she is just a terrific lady. So you can get to know her by going to her website, KarenBarnettBooks.com. And there, there's information about getting her books. I'll just tell you that you can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and buy her books right away. Mm-hmm. Local bookstores, when they're open and available, and you can go in. And Karen is a terrific writer and even a better person. So if you can have her at one of your events and get to know her, you'll be glad you did. Again, the website, Karen Barnett with two T's, KarenBarnettBooks.com. Karen, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Laura Gillott Home Team, Keller Williams Realty Bidwell Allen, is Oregon's number one real estate team, serving Lebanon since 1992. Now serving Salem and Eugene. Principal broker Laura Gillott and her home team have the experience and service you can rely on in your real estate transaction. Call Laura and her home team now. If you're a first-time buyer, seller, or an experienced real estate developer, Laura Gillott has agents available 7 days a week, including Sundays, with their no-pressure approach. Just honest advice and looking after your best interests. Log on to TeamGillott.com.
Dying is a sacred act. Being involved with hospice and being a recipient of the love that hospice gives has helped me understand that there's a lot of dignity to dying with peace and dying without pain.
Lumina Hospice and Palliative Care. Compassion, comfort, and support for the ones you love. LuminaHospice.org.
A life well-lived is beautiful to behold, full of people sharing moments of laughter and tears of joy, the rush of love, excitement, the feeling of pure contentment. From encouraging words you'll never forget to good deeds done right when they were needed most, in these moments exist the good stuff, the memories we value most, the experiences that make life worth living to the fullest. Awesome do for. Celebrate life.
I'm Shauna Warner, owner of Artisan Custom Countertops. Do you need to update your kitchen and bathrooms? How about some new outdoor living? Whether you're using a general contractor or prefer to do it yourself, Artisan is your local source for handcrafted, natural, and engineered stone countertops. Call Artisan Custom Countertops for your no-cost estimate, 541-259-9009, 541-259-9009, or see us at artisancounters.com. CCB 169.
New Horizons In-Home Care is now hiring caregivers in Corvallis, Salem, Eugene, and Florence. With lots of hours available, multiple shifts, and competitive wage scale, apply at any one of their locations in Corvallis, Eugene, Salem, or Florence, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4, to complete an application and have an on-the-spot interview. For more information, please call 541-752-9059. That's 752-9059. Or visit newhorizonsinhomecare.com.
Did you know your shopping decisions can make a difference in your community? It does with Points for Profit. When you shop locally with our businesses and save your receipts, you help 30 local charities who work to sustain our community. For a complete list, visit pointsforprofit.org. And remember, shop locally, serve locally, sustain locally with Points for Profit. This message is brought to you by the following Points for Profit sponsors. Please shop them and save your receipts.
Your first choice in local news, sports, and smart talk. This is News Talk 1580 K.